God bless you, Lauren Lanning.
Okay.
All right, welcome back. How's everybody doing this week?
Good.
I'm great, Ryans. How about you?
The Ryans, yeah.
Ryan, you got your second vax the other day.
I did.
How you feeling?
Today I'm all right. Yesterday, not so great.
Yeah.
I fell asleep at dinner. That's how bad it was. Like, I was sitting there. We were eating dinner as a family. And the biggest symptom that I had after my second dose was fatigue. And it was so bad that I fell asleep probably 3 or 4 times just doing normal stuff. And so, yeah, it was quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That's about all I had too on my second one, was just a little bit of being tired. Some people had it a lot, you know, worse, like cold, flu symptoms and things like that for some few hours. But I was lucky, for some reason my immune system decided that I was just going to get a little sleepy. So,
yep. Same here.
Cool.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. I'm happy to get it.
Yep.
Go get your vaccine if you can. Save some people that you love. All right. So we've got a little bit of follow-up this week. A little follow-up on the Facebook versus Apple court case. So I think it was 9to5, or no, Mac Rumors reported on this little bit of news. Apparently a Facebook, the Facebook VP of gaming, their name is Vivek, I think, Sharma, is testifying in court on behalf of Epic. And so because of this, Apple said, hey, we would like 17,000 documents about this person. And Facebook was like, no, the discovery phases are already over. And we gave you 1,600 documents already, with 200 of those being on Sharma. And so we're not going to do it. And I thought it was funny just to see the spat back and forth where, like, you know, Apple's like, okay, well, we want to know about your your gaming corporate operations now, if you're going to butt in here. It seems like, to me, when I was reading this, it kind of feels like a proxy war. You know, when like there's two superpowers that are fighting against each other, in this case, Apple and Facebook, that they'll like fight like little proxy wars instead of actually fighting directly with themselves. And that's kind of what's happening here a little bit, but not really. The analogy's fallen down, but where, you know, Apple's fighting Epic and Facebook's like, hey, we'll testify in favor of you. So yeah, anyway, that's all for that follow-up this week.
Still fighting the fight.
Yeah, I was gonna say the saga continues, right? Seems like some of that stuff's never ending.
Well, that's what.
Yeah,
I actually thought this was already close to end. I thought they were saying that Epic was in the wrong. I thought we were done.
No, it hasn't even gone to trial yet, man. I think the trial is next month. I think it's in May. Is when they're gonna go to trial, and I think Epic did open a case in Australia as well. But the Australian courts were like, we're not going to rule on this. Let's just see what the U.S. has to say. So that kind of got put on the burner. But yeah, it's not going to court until next week. And a lot of Apple executives are supposed to testify. So it's going to be pretty pretty interesting next week. I'm sure we'll talk more about it then. But Ryan, you've got some new news from Best Buy.
Yeah, so Best Buy is throwing their hat in the ring with regards to a yearly membership program similar to what Amazon obviously has had with Prime for a long time, and what Walmart has, and some other companies. It seems like they're trying to get in on the action and see if they can't compete. So it looks like, kind of go over the high level, just what's included and some details here. So with this, it's called what do they call it?
Best Buy Beta.
Yeah, Best Buy Beta right now, which is interesting. But they're testing it in select markets. That's Iowa, Oklahoma, and Eastern Pennsylvania. And then they're going to open it up this month to Minnesota, North Carolina, and Tennessee. So it says about 60 stores in total that it'll be available at. And essentially, for $200 a year, so a little pricier than the other services, but kind of they've expanded on what their offering is just beyond, like, you know, free shipping or, you know, that kind of thing. So for this, you get a dedicated and exclusive concierge support, and I do believe that is 24/7. Unlimited Geek Squad technical support on all technology in your home, whether you purchased it at Best Buy or not. So anything that you have in your house, you get unlimited Geek Squad support. Fast and free shipping with no minimums, so that's nice. Exclusive member pricing on a wide range of products. I'm guessing it's going to be in-house brands. They didn't say specifically, but it would just make sense since they can, you know, adjust pricing on that stuff a lot easier, probably. Free in-home standard delivery and installation on most products. Again, it's probably just basic installation. 2-year protection on most purchases at Best Buy, including AppleCare on Apple products. A 60-day extended return window. And 10% off subscription services billed through Best Buy. Not 100% on some of those details around what constitutes a subscription, what constitutes, you know, the basic installation, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's the info we have as of right now. They have the what's called Total Tech Support. That's the existing tech support piece. It's kind of like an expansion of that. And that is available throughout the rest of the U.S. But yeah, so seems pretty cool. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on it?
How much did you say it was?
$200 a year.
Yeah. It seems there's like some really good things about it and some things where I'm like, I don't really care at all. So like the free shipping, it's standard shipping. So what is it, like 5-7 day shipping?
Well, so that's the thing. It's probably, you know, depending on who they use, right? If they use UPS, that's going to vary, especially where you're at. But usually it's like 3 to 5 days, I think, or 3 to 6.
See,
like
it
that.
Should be.
So,
yeah, it should just be like free 2-day shipping.
Right.
Like if you're trying to compete with Prime, first of all, you need to compete with shipping because you are a like brick and mortar retail store trying to compete in the e-commerce market. And the big advantage there besides like inventory is I can order it, or at least for me, I can order it from home and it'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry about it.
My guess is there's some logistics there, right? Like, first of all, they don't have as many warehouses and delivery vehicles to probably promise something like that. That would be my guess. And so they're probably either going to utilize existing services like UPS, FedEx, USPS, or their local stores, sure, and warehouses, right, that can do some of those deliveries. So I'm assuming that's my guess, just, you know, conjecture at this point, but that's what I would guess.
But I would think you can, you know, so you can, I mean, I'm pretty sure you can already pay like a premium when you buy something at Best Buy to get like, you know, next day or next day air delivery or whatever. So, I mean, I would think that they could renegotiate their deals with those, with like UPS and FedEx, those logistics companies, and then to get maybe a better rate because they're going to have more, would they maybe anticipate more sales going through with those higher rate, those higher shipping rates? And then they subsidize the cost of that with this $200,
right?
You know, system, because there's a lot of things in here. I was thinking about it today. There's a lot of things in here where I'm like, how is Best Buy or anybody, you know, able to do this? $200 is a lot. But if you think about like the 2-year warranty in the AppleCare on items, that's huge. Like for me, that is really big because AppleCare is expensive. But here's the thing. How many people actually use those warranties? So that's free money, right? For a majority of the things. So that's how they're going to, you know, they're going to be able to make money off of this is people get, yeah, cool, I'm going to sign up for this because I want the warranty, but then like I'm never going to use the warranty but maybe once. And so they're not eating that cost up front. Concierge team, that's kind of a mixed bag. I don't know how much money they could, you know, make or lose on that. 60-day return window, that doesn't cost them hardly anything, I'm sure. Member pricing, that could cost them some money, but that's just going to cost them. That's basically a loss leader for this, right? I mean, all these things are kind of loss leaders. So because they're not going to take it out of the cost of their cost of the item. They're going to take it out of their markup. So they're going to lose that margin on those products, but they should make it back up in this program.
Yeah. And that's why I was thinking it's probably in-house brands because their margins, I know, are much higher. So I know what those markups are a lot of times. So,
or maybe like a TV or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
Because they make most of their money off of, you know, all the accessories they sell. So they might be like, oh, you get 10% off, you know, your Sony TV or whatever. And people are like, oh my God.
Right, exactly.
And they're like, oh, well, you need these $300 worth of cables.
So that's kind of my thing with this whole membership deal is, first off, you gotta know what the percentage of savings are. And when I think of Best Buy, when I go to purchase things from them, it's normally a big product for the most part. It is like a TV, an appliance, a stereo, something of that nature that's a higher dollar electronic. Now, if I'm paying $200 a year and out of a year, how many big items am I purchasing? You know, that's where...
Well, you're right. That's the correct way to do this, but people don't think about that. When people see this, they go, oh, wait, like I don't have to worry about my products. Like I get a warranty and if I have a problem, I can call somebody and I get a discount. They don't do the math in their head like, oh, well, I need to buy 3 computers this year to pay for this service or, you know, buy a TV and a computer. They think, oh, I'm going to sign up for this and then it's just nice when I have it.
Yeah.
The same thing with Amazon. Like, do I use Amazon Prime every day or Amazon Prime Video every day? No. I pay for Amazon Prime for the shipping.
They yeah.
give you all kinds of other stuff to make you feel better about it as they slowly raise the price every year. But I don't care about any of that stuff. And most people don't. I mean, I'm just assuming most people don't think about that. I know I don't a lot of times. But I do in certain situations.
Well, and that's where, like, if this had benefits of smaller items, let's say video games or movies or things that were like the day to day that, hey, I'm probably going to buy 3 or 4 of those out of the next 3 months, but I'm going to get a 10 or 15% discount on these games now, etc. You know, that was going to be like, okay, maybe that'll add up if I'm buying some of those big products along with the small products that I know consistently are going to come into my hands. But for me, $200 a year, and I may or may not be buying these big products like that at all out of the year, I think it's kind of a waste of money.
Yeah, I definitely won't sign up for this. Because I, like you said, I don't buy enough stuff from Best Buy. I maybe buy like 4 things from Best Buy every year. Never movies, never video games. I mean, I've switched to all digital as far as like buying games, and I don't really buy movies anymore. You can just watch them all on streaming service. I don't know. I don't know who this is for. I guess this is just for like the people who bought a TV and they're like, hey, we have a service to sell you. And we'll give you this much off your TV right now. See, it pays for itself, right? Because I'm sure they'll do the thing where you can use it on this purchase. Like they used to do, we worked for Circuit City back in the day, so they would do like, you know, credit card signups and stuff like that. And oh, we'll give you this much off your TV or your computer or whatever. I could see this being like a sucker purchase for like older people that don't understand, because like unlimited geek squad tech support, I could care less about that. Like,
yeah,
this isn't marketed for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, anybody who listens to this podcast, this is not for you. This is for people that, you know,
this is
aren't into technology.
This is for your parents. You don't want to deal with them, right? Like,
basically, yeah. Like, yeah. Merry Christmas, Grandma.
Yeah, exactly.
I bought you the Best Buy beta program. What's that?
What's that?
Don't worry about it. You just won't have to talk to me anymore.
Just call this number anytime.
Yeah, this is my new number, this is my
Grandma.
New
number. Don't ask for me, but we'll get you somebody. I did check it again. So the shipping piece, there was the links are buried in this. We'll link to all of the different pieces in this in order to get to this.
Will we? Are you going to put it in the show notes?
I'm going to put it in the show notes.
Because I ain't digging for them. All right.
I'll throw it in there. it was like, you know, two or three levels down. It is free next day or free same day where it's available. So,
That is good.
Yeah. So I'm assuming depending on how close you are to a Best Buy or one of their warehouses. But yeah, it's,
why do they call it standard shipping then?
I
on the tin, they're like free standard shipping.
So I think it's free on all products, no minimums, and you'll always get the fastest shipping. So whatever the fastest is for that available for that product is how they're showing it. So.
Now, I will say, props on Best Buy for this, is when it comes to pre-ordering or something of a large mass, they are one of the best ones. I say that clearly out of like getting a hold of, like for instance, the Xbox, how they fought against the auto-buying bots and also the arcade one-ups. I've reserved those. They show up on time as promised. They're not damaged. There's a lot I will give to them over the competitors on some of these. That obviously, it's a little bit hard. Well, no, I'll even say this. Amazon Prime, when I pre-order for them, I know I'm throwing a coin up in the air on whether or not I'm getting it on launch day. I'm not with Best Buy, at least.
That would be something I think to hang their hat on is if they, I mean, this year with like, the chip shortages being so bad and the demand for like graphics cards and the new consoles and things like that, that would be something pretty cool if they were like, oh, well, if you're a Best Buy beta member, we have these set aside for you and we'll make sure that you know, we have like, I don't know, however much of our inventory is set aside for Best Buy beta members. And so you're not fighting like the 500 people who are trying to wait in line. The problem is they've had so little that it probably doesn't even matter, but still like would be interesting.
Yeah. It's a good thought and it might work for some things. Yeah. It might work for some things. But yeah. Yeah. I think I'm with you guys. I think for me, like with Amazon Prime, at the very least, I save all that money on shipping. Because of how many things I get from Amazon. And then Prime Video is included. And so I justify it with the fact that I save at the very least like double the cost of the membership in shipping on products. With this, I would not come anywhere close on the shipping.
I save probably thousands of dollars.
Exactly.
On shipping. Yeah. Right. Because I buy everything
exactly
through Amazon, everything.
Yeah. Well, and then I do Whole Foods too for the delivery, like, and then you get
so you're like full circle.
Full, yeah, exactly.
Whole Foods is too far away from my house.
It's like right across from me, so it's like I usually get stuff early. The
bougie. I don't live in the nice part of town. Yeah,
the bougie part. No, and then what's cool is because of Prime member, a lot of items you get extra discount on, and so especially like sale items, you get an extra like 10% off on, or just random sales for Prime members. So
not to mention
see, that's the thing. Yeah,
there's Prime Gaming and like they give all those cool things inside of something like I do play Smite and I play Destiny 2 and some of those, and they get free in-game skins and exotics and stuff like that just for being a Prime member.
Yeah, I hate that because I have to like go find the page to go redeem it a lot of times.
Hey, it's still a benefit that I don't hear Best Buy talking about right now, you know?
Yeah, well, you can get your blue shirt skin, like your blue polo.
Oh, the Geek Squad 1-2, like that.
And
be
then
fun.
Your retractable, like your retractable card.
Oh my gosh, like,
hip belt thing. No, So this is a tangent, but we just brought up Amazon. Did you all see like Amazon has basically kind of like an internal Kickstarter clone?
No.
Yeah, it's called like Amazon Build It. I saw it today. They're like, here's a product we're thinking about making, and then if enough people pre-order it, they make it.
Oh, that's cool.
But it seems like it's only Amazon products. So the first thing I saw that they're making that like interested me for a second, and I was like, no, I don't need that, is a sticky note printer. So it prints like little yellow like sticky notes. So you could say like, hey, lady in the tube, print my grocery list or something like that. And then it'll like print up your little grocery list, or like you could say like call da da da, and it'll print that up, and then you put sticky note on there. And they're all like little Amazon Smile sticky notes. It's kind of neat.
Fun.
Yeah, I don't know. Interesting.
That's the stuff you got to watch out
for. See where that goes.
You start dumping money into a bunch of random like products that they're green lighting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's just like Kickstarter. So you can say, yeah, I back this product, but then you don't actually get charged for the pre-order until like they're guaranteed to make it. So, but
yeah, I think yeah. Anyway, to wrap this up, I think it's a good start. I think the price point needs to change, especially if they want to expand it. Maybe they could have different tiers or whatever. Just because I think the majority of the population is not gonna find, you know, a ton of benefit, unless again you go there to buy your MacBook Pro and you know it's cost the same price as, you know, for the membership as it does for Apple Care, and then it works out and you get all those added benefits. But who's buying a MacBook Pro from Best Buy most of the time? It's, you know, you're going directly to Apple.
there's a lot of you know, cities without Apple stores,
right? And you're either ordering or you're going to the Apple store, and if you don't do either of those, then yeah, you're going to Best Buy or one of those.
But yeah, I really think this is like one of those things that they'll pitch at the cash register like we used to back in the day. It's like, oh, you know, this is $200, but you know, you're gonna save $100 right now or whatever on this big purchase that you're making, or maybe it even covers the whole cost, who knows. And if you have trouble with this computer, you don't buy this, well then, you know, you want to call us, that's going to cost you $80, and then you have to do this, that's going to cost you another $60. That's like the whole thing. You can do the weird, like, you know, confuse the customer into spending more money tricks to sell this. I mean,
it's almost gross, like we were all trained to do such a thing.
Yeah, and I didn't do that stuff. Well,
yeah, I got in trouble.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
I sold stuff to people for TVs when I sold televisions that they needed.
Like the warranty or
the monster cables, like the gold plated monster cables.
I was selling the cables.
Oh, they don't need those.
Not the monster cables. You know, you do the pitch and they're like, well, some people would push. I go, all right, whatever. But I presented it to them and then let them make their decision. That's all I did.
That's all you have to do.
Some other people wouldn't take no for an answer.
Oh, I know. I worked with some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Speaking of, I don't know. Well, we were speaking about video games a second ago. Adam,
it's the best tell transition us about
your favorite video game series of all time came out with a new game.
Yes. God bless you, Lauren Lanning. But did you guys get to watch that?
Okay.
Yeah. Did you guys get to watch the 17-minute intro video for this game? No?
Completely forgot about it.
You guys didn't check it out at all.
Yeah, sorry.
Some of us didn't do our homework this week. Yeah, so
we're all even.
We'll talk about that later.
Anyway. It's not me. I do. Well, anyway, so the new game is Soulstorm, Oddworld Soulstorm. And this is a remake, not a remaster, of Abe's Exodus, which is one of my all-time favorite games ever. I loved and adored the game. And if you play the game, the first opening cutscene says so much about what they're doing just instantly. The drama, the tone, even the colorations, it's all extremely true to the original. And it's to me, it's like Metal Gear Solid in a sense, far as where they're going and how connected it is to the storytelling, just right straight into it immediately. I'm disappointed you guys didn't watch it though, because I wanted to say a couple things about it.
Well, go ahead. I mean,
it's very interesting because one of the things that they like to hook on is that Abe is a very average person. He is not what you would call a superhero, or really what you'd call a heroic character. He is just kind of in this position because he doesn't have a whole lot of choice from exposure. And they really play on that at the beginning of this game. They really show it as like, hey, he's trying to make up excuses of, I just want to chill. Like I saved, you know, my people, and they're like, hey, no, this isn't it. And he just doesn't want to accept it. He's making up excuses left and right, and then things go south. It's good. Like I will say my first impressions of this game is actually very solid. There's one key mechanic that they've added in that I really didn't like, and that was like a double jump. So basically the game itself is a little bit more of a faster pace. If you played the original, the original is very of a slow pace, hop up, clunk, clunk kind of stuff. But this one is a much faster pace. And there's good and bad to it. But for some reason, that was just one of the hokey things for me. I don't know why, but whenever I had a double jump, I'm like, why?
It's probably, you know, you have such nostalgia for the source material that, you know, any kind of mechanics changes, you're like, you know, kind of push back against that. I know you brought up Metal Gear, and I know in like some of the later Metal Gears, like Metal Gear 5, like it's all like open world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why does Metal Gear need to be open world? It's a stealth game. Like I need to hide behind things. And it doesn't mean that the game is worse. It's just that my opinion of the game is based upon my original experience with it. And so I've kind of attached to that, the way that the game was played and the mechanics of it at that time. And so that's probably why you feel that way.
Yeah, that, and like at least with Metal Gear 5, they kind of, they're like, hey, new character, quote unquote, new, you know, like there was different things that were new to kind of massage that into it. But like this one, there wasn't really anything to kind of ease you to that because it wasn't a new and tasty either. So
yeah, I still haven't played 5. I just haven't played.
You should play that one.
I know that they just attach balloons to horses. That's it.
That is the game. Metal Gear Balloon Attachments.
So yeah, so far you like it?
Yeah, so far. I haven't got to play it as much as I'd like to just yet, but first impressions, I'm very biased, so it's going to be hard to make me hate it unless they just downright destroy it. So I'm curious to see what your all's thoughts are.
Yeah. Oddworld's one of those game series that I've always wanted to play, but then for some reason, like I never play or never get to finish. And what is the remake of the first one? Is it New and Tasty?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. The originals.
Yeah. So I've been
Abe's Odyssey.
Yeah.
New and Tasty is the remake.
Right. Yeah. So I've been playing that on Steam. Well, I was playing it, but I haven't been playing it in the last couple months. And that, you know, that was really good. So I'll eventually make my way to this game, because I did miss out on the series as it came out. I mean, I might have played like a few minutes of it or whatever, but never got to appreciate the story and like its commentary, its social commentary. And I think that's one of the things that you love about the game. And that is one of the things that is great about the game. I saw an interview with Lauren Lanning once, and I was just really impressed by him as like a creator. And so I want to experience these games so that I can, you know, get that from him. So I'll probably make my way to this game eventually, but I don't really know when.
Fair enough. I get it. We all have busy times, but you gotta do it for me.
That's right. So speaking of making your way to games, Ryan, you played Among Us with us.
I did.
For the first time ever.
I did. Yeah, it's one of those, everyone's been kind of like enamored with it the last year, right? Like some pretty high profile people were playing it, AOC for one, over the last year. And I heard a ton about it and just never played. I don't know why. And so, yeah, this past week we got a game together, the three of us and some randos online. Yeah, it definitely brought me back to like camp and playing. Oh man, there was a couple of different ones that we used to play.
It's like Werewolf.
Yeah, Werewolf. One was Hitler, which was weird. And then like just Assassin was another one. Those types of things. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, you mentioned Hitler. There's a board game called Secret Hitler that I have that's basically the same thing. Yeah. Man, I want to play that so bad. I bought it like years ago, but haven't been able to play it.
Yeah, we did that except just with cards, right? Where you would just have a deck of cards, and I think it was the Ace of Spades. Usually, it would be the marker, and then you'd pass them out. You shuffle and pass them out, and then that person. Then you have to, you know, do all the stuff. So yeah, it was cool because it kind of brought back some of that nostalgia, but also in like a, you know, new reimagined way. Like I thought it was cool that, oh, you got to go off and, you know, do these, you know, specific tasks and fake those tasks and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was really cool. I like it.
Yeah, the tasks are a neat mechanic because they're, you know, they are a way for the non-imposters to win without finding the imposters. But at the same time, they expose you because exactly. They put up like these big, you know, modals. There's that word again. Yeah, they put up these big modals so that you can't like see, you know, the rest of the map around you. And so somebody can sneak up behind you and like stab you, cut off your head or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say it was quite funny and stuff because I mean, immediately I'm like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And we didn't really like get a quick intro. We just like kind of jumped in. And so I was like, oh, cool. I can just go through this vent. Like, cause that's what I want to do. Cause I was, I was one of the imposters. And of course, immediately I was, you know, found out because apparently only the imposters can do that. So that was fun.
Yeah. You jumped in that vent, like right in front of somebody. Yeah. And you're like, Nope.
Got him.
Yeah. We didn't get to try. So for those listening, Among Us has recently put out a patch that included a new map and some fun skins, which did get Ryan good. He thought he was getting the new map, but he was actually just buying skins. That's okay, though.
You got me a couple ways.
He's a part of the Among Us beta program membership. It's only $3,000 a month.
Yeah.
And my soul.
But we were trying to try out this new map, and we did not successfully get into a queue.
We couldn't find anybody to join our game.
Yeah it was definitely a weird scenario. We built it out. Normally we had like four people in there, but yet we still couldn't get anyone to join, which is not very common. So not sure what the deal is on that, but they did add in the account system. So now when you log in, you actually set up an account for Among Us, which is supposed to help out with a lot of the hacking and the goofy stuff that people were doing in the past, which actually makes me pretty happy.
What's some of the hacking people were doing?
What were some of the hacking that people were doing? Well, so the game is built on Unity, and I guess it really blew up in popularity. You know, it was just like a little small game that a group of a couple people made, and then it blew up and it got like so popular. And of course, you know, it being just a small indie game, they didn't really like, I guess, you know, triple check all of the security and stuff. And so apparently there was like ways that you could modify some of your local files to, I don't know, give yourself a benefit. Okay. Do you know exactly what any of those were, Adam?
I don't remember. I just know there were some goofy things that you could change and people were exploiting it. So this was one of the ways to help out on that.
Maybe. Yeah, I think maybe one of them was like you walk through walls or clip or something, that kind of stuff. But
change the game to Counter-Strike.
I don't remember what I was going to say now. Yeah, so they added the account system and the new map. And they also added like a one of those radial wheels so that you can like emote or indicate, you know, who you think the imposter is or where they were and things like that without having to type, which is really nice because on some of the mobile clients, like on the iPhone, if you have a smaller phone, like it's kind of annoying that like a giant keyboard comes up and you're trying to type while you're seeing the game. But with all of the things that they added, they also introduced a pretty gross bug that was consistent. So I hope they patched that. I'm not sure if that was just part of the initial patch or if like it's happened afterwards or what, but that was the first time we'd played the game in a while, Adam and I, and we never had this issue before. The issue is when you call a meeting, right? And you go to the screen where you discuss, you know, who got killed and where, and basically the chat view. Once that voting and everything is over and you go back to the regular overworld of the game, you can't, at least on PC, on Steam, that's what you were playing on as well, I think. When you go back, you can't move your character. You can't move at all. You can't do anything.
Yep.
But the way to work around it is, if you play the game, is you click on the little settings cog on the top right-hand corner of the screen, and then just back out of that, back to the regular world, and you can move again. So it must have something to do with like the focus or what has what controls basically is in focus, and it probably gets disabled in the menus.
Yeah, and I played on iPad, and same thing. So I think it's definitely like cross-platform having that issue.
Yeah, I think there was a patch that I got today, but I don't know. We'll have to see if they've already addressed that situation. I assume that's probably bubbled up by now.
Yeah, that was consistent. So I'm hoping, you know, that'd be the first thing that they would patch because it was pretty egregious.
Yeah, so some other things that may be among us here soon. Got some electric car stuff. Some stuffsies.
Among Us. That's a good one. That's a good one. They will be among us more and more, right? As time moves on and as everyone, all the manufacturers jump on the bandwagon, the electric car bandwagon. But yeah, the latest, I'm sure people have started to see the commercial. GMC unveiled the Hummer EV, which is cool. Never really was a huge fan of Hummers, but this one looks pretty cool.
I always liked them.
You always liked them?
Yeah, I always liked the Hummer, but I always thought the gas and situation stuff like that was too much.
Yeah, yeah, it like what 8 miles to the gallon or something stupid.
Something ridiculous. Insane. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah. So with this, it's coming in 2023, 830 horsepower on that bad boy with a 300 mile range, which is pretty impressive for, you know, a vehicle that size.
I was going to say 30 minute battery life.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, 300 miles. Like, that's pretty cool. Of course, with that platform, it's a huge battery, right? I think they said it was 20 modules. So, yeah, it's pretty massive. But yeah, 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, which is cool. I think that's pretty quick, especially for an SUV. The crazy part, of course, is the price. Starting is $105,000 with an upgrade off-road package of $110,000. So definitely on the higher end of vehicles. It's pretty standard for electric vehicle of this, you know, magnitude. So, but yeah, it looks good. It's got some cool features. Adam, I know you liked the crab walk, which basically allows you to kind of move sideways out of the, like, kind of maneuver around things. There's also a feature where it's called extract mode, where it will raise the entire vehicle 6 inches to clear obstacles. So that's cool. So they're definitely building it for some off-road.
So is that when you run over like a Greenpeace person's like, stop driving the Hummer.
It's electric, bro.
Well, like, so there's two models, right? And there's one that's like the 100,000 in 2023. That one's coming out. But in 2024, they got the EV2 that's like 80,000.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there will be one that's 625 horsepower, so a little bit less powerful. That'll be starting at 89.9. Still, it looks like the same battery life for the most part. 250 miles, so a little bit less. As well, it only has two motors. The Edition 1 has three. So again, that's probably, you know, that's where all the more power is coming from. So yeah, so that's going to be 2023. And then actually then 2024, another one's coming out for 10,000 less. So it's like a tiered release.
What's the point of the cheaper one? If you can afford a $110,000 car, you can afford, I mean, if you can afford a $90,000 car, you can afford a $110,000 car. I'm pretty sure.
That's kind of how I feel about it too. It did strike me as odd because, especially because that's a 200 horsepower drop, right? From the $100,000 version down to the 90. That's quite a bit.
Well, here's the goofy thing. So, like, if you're looking at the EV2 right now, they're saying that it's a 400 volt, 16 module battery, the 250, but you can opt for the 800 volt, 20 module pack to put you back up to the 300 plus miles. So it's like, oh, I'm going to do the 80,000 and kind of pick and choose what features I want there. I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm sure that battery upgrade is going to be 10K.
Right.
So then it's like, well, then I'm back up there.
Yeah, but you said there's only is basically two-wheel drive instead of four-wheel drive at that point? Is that what you're saying?
Well, so the way that the drive setup that they're talking about is set up is, so on the more expensive one, you have three motors on the front and rear axle. So I'm assuming two are going to drive.
Three motors?
Yeah, three motors in the more expensive one. It doesn't say how those are configured. So it doesn't say if like two are going to be up front or two are going to be in the back, right? So it's looking like one axle is going to have dual motors on it at some point so that you can have, you know, power to those wheels independently is what it seems like. Again, none of that detail is here from what I can find. And then with the cheaper one, you're just going to have single motor up front, single motor in back. So,
well, what I was getting at is if you could upgrade the battery while you have like a smaller drivetrain, maybe you can get the cheaper one and get better range than you can with the larger one, the more expensive one.
Potentially, right? You could, because just depending on the configuration of the motors, I guess is probably what it is. In theory, the less things that you're powering, the more battery life that you
have. But they don't say.
Yeah, it doesn't say.
Okay.
Yeah, there's not a ton of details on the tech that I could find. I'm sure that there's probably deep somewhere that has like all the specifics, but they haven't been as much upfront as I can see. But
yeah, I like Adam. I've always kind of liked Hummers, but then hated them because they're just like horrible pieces of garbage that just burn gasoline for no good reason. That said, Rivian have they actually come out and started selling cars yet?
I think this year. is yeah, when so they're you can a actually US,
them. They're a US. I think we talked about them on here before, right? They're a US automaker that's making like adventure type SUVs, kind of like, you know, the Jeep Wrangler, but like electric and hella nice.
Yeah, and they have a pickup too as well.
Oh, they do yeah, have a pickup. Have a pickup. Okay.
Like an actual pickup look, not like the Cybertruck.
Not like the DeLorean truck that Adam wants so bad. Yeah, but they were featured on A Long Way Up, which is a cool show. I think that's when we did talk about them before. So anyway, I bring them up because there was a Bloomberg article featuring them talking about how they are going to build their own fast charger network a la Tesla. And so what their plan is to build 3,500 fast chargers at 600 different sites. Apparently each site can cost up to like $320,000. So this is a big capital expenditure. They're going to have 10,000 slow chargers at campsites, motels, and trailheads. And all of this is by 2024. And that the campsites, motels, and trailheads is really interesting because it goes along with their brand where they are marketing themselves as, you know, you just kind of made fun of it, Adam, as like, oh, the adventurer's car or whatever. But that's what these are actually supposedly made for. That's what they did in The Long Way Up. They took them from the tip of South America all the way up to L.A., right? California?
Yep.
And they built like a charger network along the way so that those guys could charge the first vehicles that they ever got off their production.
Yeah. Yeah. They were definitely prototypes. Like duct tape, glue, and some bubble gum were holding them together.
They were handmade by the engineers.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And engineers went with them kind of thing. That's how prototypey they were.
But they look really cool and they're supposed to be rugged.
Yes.
Vehicles, you know, they're designed to be rugged. Now we'll see, you know, when they finally come out, how that pans out. What's interesting about their network though, is that they are going to, kind of focus them in more rural areas where all of Tesla's network, I think Tesla has around like 65 to, 7,000, different, chargers, fast chargers. And most of those are in like metropolitan areas. The, you know, Midwest and urban landscape is basically a desert for electrical chargers. I think the bigger thing to think about with all of these electric chargers is that they create lock-in. I was thinking of them today as kind of like cell phone carrier networks, right? So if I buy a Tesla, well, I can only go where I have quote unquote service, you know, where I have chargers. So, and then once I guess not, unless you have your own home charger, you know, if you buy a Tesla, then you might be, if you put a home charger in, you're going to be more likely to buy another Tesla because you've invested that money into the home charger.
Oh, are the chargers all proprietary? Is that what you're saying?
Well, hold
Tesla's.
Yes.
Well,
so
yes,
but Rivian's, what they're doing is slow chargers will be able to be used by other manufacturers. So if like you have a GM, you know, one of the Volts or whatever, you'll be able to use their slow chargers, but the fast charging network, all of that stuff's proprietary. And that's the same with Tesla too. I don't know if Tesla has any slow charger for everybody, but yeah.
Yeah. I think you can charge slow. I think so. Like slow chargers, I think in general are just like 240 hookup on all
yes,
of these cars.
Exactly. Basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So anywhere you have like a 240, you can, I think, is it 240 or is it less?
It might even be 120, because I know that that was part of the thing. Yeah.
But yeah, so slow chargers, like Ryan said, you can just kind of hook them up to any common electrical. But the fast chargers are like designed, you know, to fast charge those specific vehicles. So Tesla has their own fast chargers. Rivian has their own fast chargers. What is interesting, though,
I found all the charging info. I can talk about real quick.
Yeah, go ahead. So,
yeah, so I pulled up the like specs. Yeah, so this is off of Tesla. They have 120 volts, which is basically like your standard plug at your house. And so you get an adapter that works with that. That's like the very first level. And then you have level two, which is 240, which I'm pretty sure is what most of the slow chargers are, because it's 6 hours approximately to get a full charge. So, and then the level three, which is the 480 volts, is, you know, 30 minutes to the 170 mile range. That's a Tesla, but that's kind of like what a lot of the industry is doing, is like that first level, it's going to take you probably a couple of days to actually fully charge the thing.
It's like a trickle charge.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that level two, cool, you charge it overnight, you're probably good to go in the morning. And then of course the supercharging, which is, hey, I'm doing a cross country road trip, I'm stopping in here, get my, you know, 80% on them to the next one kind of thing.
Which is crazy to think that a 240 is a slow charge, because 240 is like the big dog, like typically in a house. Like, right? Oh man, I got to put a 240 in from a dryer. It's like, no, you don't even understand. Yeah, getting back to the propriety of these chargers, is they create lock-in. But what I think is interesting is Ford actually uses, for their Mach-E, the Mustang Mach-E, they use Electrify America, which is a network that Volkswagen built out, kind of like as reparations for them lying about their diesel emissions on their cars. So, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if that's, I mean, it's a good thing for consumers, right, to have a universal network. That's why personally I think that there should be, you know, whatever, you know, people might criticize me, but I think there should be like a standard or a government standard. And then the U.S. government builds out the network or subsidizes a universal standard to a company. And then the company goes out and builds it, builds that network. Because, I mean, that's what we've done, you know, forever, whenever a new technology came around. I mean, Eisenhower built the entire interstate system.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think that this would be a good shift, too, for some of these gas stations and stuff like Shell or Chevron. Like, hey, start hopping in the bandwagon and put an area of these universal plug-ins for these electric cars.
Yeah, don't fight the current, because it's coming. Whether fast or slow, it's coming. And, you know, if you help out and you get in there early, you can make some money.
Yeah, which, here's the deal. Like, we're not going to get to the point where everyone has one until that kind of level of government infrastructure investment is done, right? Because
it's a chicken and egg problem.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
People don't want to, you will not have mass adoption of electric cars without a giant grid of chargers.
Exactly.
You won't have a giant grid of chargers without the electric car. So that's why somebody needs to come in and jumpstart it, i.e., in my opinion, the U.S. government should, is part of like a big infrastructure push and jobs. Subsidize these.
So is that part of this new infrastructure plan? I haven't seen, because
I don't know
that there is some electric pushes in this plan. I haven't seen if it includes, like, you know, partnering with these companies. But that's what Rivian has said, is like, we're just going to do this on our own because the government isn't doing it. They're just like, and it was the same reason Tesla just went for it, is because no one was doing it at the governmental level to get this infrastructure. They said, well, fine, we'll just fund it. Because if we
And it's an asset, right?
Yep.
That's an asset for their brand and for their cars, because they can say, hey, we have the largest or the second largest network of chargers. nobody else does. So you want to buy our stuff.
Exactly.
And they did that because they were able to do that, I'm assuming, Rivian, because they had like investors and angel investors that fronted that money, where in a normal, you know, old school America government economy, what we would do is the U.S. government would subsidize that instead of waiting for the financial market to subsidize it, right? And then that becomes something that is owned by America instead of owned by like one company. And then that company decides that you have a good enough service. I'm sorry, we said you have fiber to your house, but we actually don't. Yeah, I looked, speaking of AT&T, I looked where, you know how they said that I had fiber? I am eligible for 5 megs.
Yeah, exactly. Same. Yep.
Outrageous. Anyway.
Yeah, I think this is going to take off. I think the standards are going to come, and whether that's like, hey, you can buy this adapter that works with, you know, the supercharging station or whatever it looks like, so that like you don't have to, oh, because again, $320,000 per charging station, that's insane. And so
not per station, per site.
Per site. Yeah. So should say,
so they might put like 10 chargers, 5 chargers at a site.
Station,
right?
I was saying like a site, because I was thinking gas station, that kind of thing. Not like actual charger. But yeah, like that's insane. But you look at their map and you could legitimately go across the country to most locations with being able to go from charger to charger and do it pretty well. And that's personally, that's what I've been waiting for, is to where we can get to where you have long enough range to get between some of those superchargers, because I love doing road trips. And that's kind of like our number one way of traveling when we go on vacation. But like you can't count on, you know, a lot of the grid just yet until like this kind of thing happens. And so it's exciting to me.
Yeah, I wonder when they're going to make an electric semi truck.
Didn't Tesla already do that?
They had to.
Did they?
So and something we should cover, they're running low on lithium ion batteries, and so there's a shortage right now of lithium ion, so that's why they had to postpone the semi truck. So but yeah, I mean, Rivian's doing
shortage on everything.
There is. But I mean, and this is in the article we'll link to, but like Rivian is promising Amazon 100,000 delivery vehicles. And so over the next 10 years, it's like 10,000 a year they're going to be creating for Amazon, which I'm sure you guys have seen the commercials, Amazon talking about the way that they're, you know, changing some stuff, which includes electric vehicles and delivery trucks. And
are those little, are those Rivian like Amazon vans going to have like built-in catheters so that the drivers can pee into those instead of bottles like they have been? Or, you know, how's that going to work?
Oh, man.
Well, they'll have long enough to take bathroom breaks while it's charging.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like knock on your door, be like, hey, can I pee?
Can I use your restroom?
Plugged in outside.
Dude, I'll tell you what. If an Amazon guy needed to use the restroom, I'd totally let him use my restroom. Like, dude, I'm sorry. Get in here.
I don't know, man. He's going to deliver some packages. He's going to deliver some packages to your toilet.
Hey, that's how you get better service, though, is you treat them right.
But they're never the same person.
Well, I mean, eventually.
Share the love with everybody.
Yeah.
Now, UPS, on the other hand, some boys, people.
Well, Brown, do for you.
Anyway. Yeah. So, yeah. It's pretty interesting. I think that wraps up our little electric car corner. Just go ahead and head this off. We were going to talk about the Eternals this week. Adam got his issues late, and instead of us kind of, you know, doing a half job on it and not discussing it thoroughly, because it was the freshest in Ryan's mind, because he just finished reading it. Adam's not completely finished, and I read it like 3 weeks ago, so I kind of need to do a refresher. We are going to do that next week, though. We're going to do the media club next week and go over the Eternals. So if you haven't bought a copy yet, you still have time now. We're giving you an extra week You can hit the Amazon affiliate link in the show notes, support the show, and get a really cool book by Neil Gaiman, and enjoy the conversation that we have about it next week. That said, we are talking about Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Episode 3. And who would like to start us off with this episode? I thought it was a spectacular episode, but...
I thought it was a good episode, too. I like where it's going. I thought it was interesting that they bring Zemo back into all this after what happened from Civil War. That's where, you know, for those who haven't seen any of this stuff, that's where he's from. He's the dude that messed with everybody's minds and attempted to kill himself at the end. And Black Panther stopped him and, you know, put him in prison.
So here's the funny thing about that. I didn't remember that Zemo was in Civil War. Like, I just don't remember him at all in that movie. And apparently, like, he was a big part of that movie. I have been reading, I think the Hollywood Reporter had like a list of 5 or 6 like series of comic books to read in preparation for Falcon the Winter Soldier. And I have been reading those. And one of those is a whole like 6-issue arc on Zemo. It's just all about him. He's traveling through time and seeing his family and stuff. It's really cool. And then a couple other ones, that he's in. And so I know him more from the comics now than I do from Civil War. But he is like a fantastic character. And so I'm glad that they've got him in here. And the actor that they have for him, Daniel Brühl, is spectacular. He is so good as Zemo.
Yeah, I think some of it was kind of unexpected where they were going with the story. They definitely lightened up on the humor this time around on this episode. They were focusing more on what the nuts and bolts of the story was and where they're trying to progress. And I forget the woman's name, the agent that was related to Carter.
Sharon Carter.
Yeah. She comes back into the scene and she's excellent. They're doing a good job with her. Although I'm not exactly sure what's going on with her, judging by the end of that episode.
What? How do you mean?
She meets up with that other chick and hops to a car, and I'm trying to remember what she said there, like, we got a problem or something, and they jet. But she's also in a place where she's got a bunch of stolen stuff too.
Yeah, so she's in Madripoor, which is basically a crime city in the comics. And it's basically like there are no laws. This is where all of the like supervillains hang out. Villains, bad people. And the reason for her being there, at least explained in this episode, is they don't have any extradition. And because she broke the law in, was it Civil War?
Yeah.
And helped Cap and everybody. They all got pardoned, but she did not. And so she's hiding out in Madripoor and just trying basically to make ends meet. So she's having like parties with stolen art and all kinds of things. But yeah, she is a BA in this. Like when they go and visit the scientist that is making the super serum, while they're inside, she's outside just beating the snot out of everybody that the power broker sent. Like, oh man, she's so good.
Yeah, I think that Zemo is responsible for all of this, but that's just my preemptive feelings on what's happening here.
Of all of what?
The serum, all of it. I think he's going to end up being like the mastermind from prison at the end of all this.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. I kind of lean that way, especially because when he killed the scientist, it's like, what are you trying to like cover up here? Because it was almost like dude has some knowledge that he doesn't want anyone else to get. That's what it seemed like to me. So,
but he did let him finish before he shot him.
He did. I don't know though. I think there's something to that, because I think the fact that he, like, I think some way he was pulling strings from prison that event, like, and knew he was going to be able to get out, and just kind of orchestrated that. And I think you're right. I think there's something to that.
That is a possibility. In the comics, at least the ones I've read, Zemo is basically the arch nemesis of Captain America now that Red Skull's gone. And so, like, in all the series that I've read, if he's in it, like, he's the mastermind behind everything. He's like the big bad, the big boss. And so I could see that happening, because he's very calculated, very smart. And I think that they portray that really good, in this episode. I mean, these episodes are 50 minutes long, so I feel like we're almost talking about a movie. Because, like, this is the first time, like, he's had any screen time. So yeah, it could be that he's orchestrated the whole thing. Yeah, there's some other things I want to say, but I think that they happen in episode 4. They're not spoilers, but they're like comments, and so I'm just not gonna say them.
Yeah, because the other side of me is sitting here thinking that maybe he's not the mastermind, but he's definitely trying to clean up anything that may be involved with it, because he wants all that gone, considering what happened to his family. So I could see him going either way on it. He's either A, that he's the mastermind, or he's got a completely different plan he's doing, or he's just cleaning up the show.
And so that's what I was going to say, is like, he hates any kind of like supremacy, like super soldiers, Hydra, like anything like that. He basically thinks that, at least in the comics, that he and his family is like the height of everything. Like, they're the best, they're the smartest. But in one of this series, Thunderbolts Presents Zemo is what I was talking about. He like saves the world. And then in part of saving the world, it like shoots him back through time, and he keeps going through, he keeps jumping through time to like different people in his family line until he like comes all the way back to present time. And through that, he like basically learns how terrible like his family was, and that like some of the things that they said weren't true. So I don't know what Zemo we're getting in this show. But he does have some redeeming qualities in him, even though in other ones, like, he's just fucking, even though he's just the bad guy, like, he's the bad guy. He's trying to basically kill everybody, kill all the humans, and it's just going to be him and his cronies left.
Yeah, it seems like in this, from episode 3, that he may be kind of getting to Sam a little bit, because Sam made the comment that he's starting to feel like he should have just destroyed the shield.
And that's what Zemo does. Like, he gets in your head and messes with you. Basically, he's so from what I've gathered that I've seen of him in the comics, and what we are seeing of him in episode 3, is he's the smartest person in the room. Always. Nobody is like, he's the smartest person in the room. Yeah. I mean, there's stuff in episode 4 that I want
to
talk about.
Well, it'll be exciting next week to talk about.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about the Flag Smashers, piece in this? So I'm really conflicted now with, like, I was hoping that they're going to find out that they're very much the Robin Hood style of things, and they're just trying to help out their people, right? Like, the government stockpiling all these rations and not actually handing them out to people, and so they're going to get them. But then girl, I forget her name. What's her name? Oh, shoot.
I can't remember either.
Girl leading the
something with an M.
Carly Morgenthau. Yes.
Yeah. Carly.
Yeah. Morgenthau. So Carly Morgenthau is willing to just murder people because it's now, it seems like it's going to take it beyond just, you know, taking care of people and actually trying to, you know, send a message to the governments of the world and those that are trying to, you know, keep people in camps and things like that. So it's interesting.
Well, I think what you're seeing is you're seeing the right, like you're seeing how extremism develops, right? So in the beginning, her and her people, like, you know, her crew that she's with, they feel wronged by the, is it the GRC is what it is? Because after people came back from the snap or the blip, whatever the hell they're calling
the
it
blip.
Now, after people came back, things started getting back to normal. But during the blip, like everybody was like helping each other and it was like one world and like we're all going to try to be together. And now things are getting back to the way that they were, and they feel wronged because people they know are dying, and they feel like nobody cares, right? So she started this group and got the super serum to try to make a difference, but it's a slippery slope and a thin line between doing the right thing and doing the wrong thing, and fighting for a cause the right way versus the wrong way, right? There's always, you know, more than one way to come at something. And so what we're seeing with her and with Walker, the new Captain America, is a slow turn to extremism. I think we start to see that in episode 3 with him too.
Absolutely.
Where, I mean, in my notes, I've got Captain America, no-knock warrant. Like he basically just busts into that place and starts like hassling and hustling people. You know, like where are they at? Where are they at? Because he's trying to do the right thing too, right? He's trying to save lives. He's trying to, I mean, amongst like trying to live up to the name of Captain America, let's leave that aside. He's trying to do the right thing and find the people that are doing the wrong thing. But in doing that, there is a right way to do that, and there is a wrong way to do that. And I think with her and with him, what we're seeing is them both slowly go to extremes to try to get.
Yeah, the end justifies the means. It's exactly, yeah.
Well, and the irony to all this, though, is that if they continue this path, and their thoughts and where they're going, the flag smashers and all that, then they were basically agreeing with what Thanos was doing was the right thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So what you're saying is Thanos was right.
Yeah, because he was basically saying that the universe was a better place by halving it because it would bring unity and people wouldn't starve and fall apart. And they weren't seeing that at the time. They wanted the people back, and now the people are back, and now they don't like it because it's getting back to the way it was. So in an ironic way, it's almost like they're trying to say he was right.
Yeah.
Which is kind of messed up. I didn't really think about that until we were talking this through, and it's like, oh, well.
Yeah, I came at it in like the perspective of like the real world, like, you know, in reality, like, how we see like extremism form and grow. And then you just took that and you tied it back to like the whole genesis of this thing, which I'm sure that they wrote it that way, you know? So that's a good point. Do me a favor and watch episode 4 when you go to bed tonight.
I will be watching.
And then tomorrow. When you can't.
Yes, I will be.
And then when you can't sleep, call me.
Yeah.
We'll record a podcast.
Yeah. I think that's what makes the MCU so great, though, is that there are so many different things that you can think about with what they're doing, and either A, how they're tied to each other, or how they tie to the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. Marvel successfully took what is great what is great and special about comics. They successfully translated that into the video medium, right? Because at least for me, what is spectacular, what I really enjoy about comics is that this comic over here that is like number 937 has something in it that is related to issue number 7 of this other book, right? All of these arcs are intertwined, and you don't have to go all the way back to like get a good show. Like some of you just come in and watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and it's a good show, but you get so much more if you know that backstory, if you know the depth of the characters, if you like, you know, Adam's figured out like, oh, well, you know, they're kind of like reflecting what Thanos' beliefs were. You know, you get that extra appreciation because you know who Thanos is. You know that backstory. We've seen those movies, and they've taken those kind of like interconnected stories from the comic books and have successfully been able to translate them to the films and to the TV shows. And the other facet of comics that at least I am getting out of these shows, maybe not so much of the movies, but really, I mean, at least this show is like commentary on the real, on like modern like times. Some of the Captain America, Sam Wilson Captain America series that I'm reading are from like 2015. And there is like some blatant commentary about like right-wing extremism and, you know, xenophobia and nationalism and how that is actually, you know, not our, the values that we portray. They're a corruption of the values that the United States supposed to stand for and that Captain America originally stood for. I don't care. I'm not really, I mean, I'm trying not to get into politics, but I mean, it's basically, you know, it is a political commentary. And I think that's what those books always did, right? The Captain America books was like, oh, we're fighting Nazis. Like those were the enemies of the times. And now we're kind of fighting with ourselves a lot, at least in the United States. And it's interesting to see that kind of thing in the comic books. But anyway, I digress. Like the two things that they have, to sum it up, the two things that they've successfully translated from the comics to film and television is interconnected stories and connecting those stories to the real world and making like a social or moral commentary about that. They've been able to move that from comics to film. And I think that's why they're so great.
Well, and I also like that they were able to, like, because what was cool about comic books, right, was all the diverse characters and what their stories were not like cloned characters for each. When I say that, I mean universal, as in like DC and MCU obviously have some cloned characters between the two of them.
Right.
But
Batman, Moon Knight.
Right. But in their central universes, they are very unique characters. And when you see, like, for instance, I didn't know anything about Guardians of the Galaxy before. And I remember watching the first trailer of that movie and I was like, this is stupid looking. I don't care about a tree and a raccoon that looks corny. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, they made me love a tree. They made me love a tree. They figured out how to make me care about a tree that only says, I am Groot.
Groot?
That's it. You know, I mean, like that's kind of the uniqueness of these characters in these universes that people who don't care about comic books, they don't care about sci-fi, but they could sit down and watch the movie and be like, you know what? I'm invested in these characters. There's some weird relatability to my life or whatever I've seen in past or the things that I like. And I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that's, to both your points, I think that's what's been so good about Marvel is life and people are complicated. And when you can translate that into these stories and show that people are not one-dimensional and complicated, you know, like when you could do that in an entertaining and like really good way, like they've done, like it just has longevity and you really can tie and you like, you just dive into these stories and characters a lot more, right? Because like you said, Adam, like you could see yourself in all these different people or you can see people that you know, and it just brings that richness to it. And that's, I think, why they are, you know, standouts when it comes to this type of media. They've just, I don't know. It's like the right people and the, you know, right type of like philosophy of how they want to write these narratives. They've just done, you know, just a killer job.
And they're getting more complex with it. Like the villains are getting more complex, because if you go back and watch the original, you know, how they start off these MCU and stuff, Iron Man, etc. It was the normal power, like, hey, I'm going to be the bad guy because I want the power, da 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 da. And that was just kind of the feel. But then you start getting into like Age of Ultron, and all of a sudden you start seeing philosophical reasons. And then from there on, things are getting more and more complex of why these villains are here, and not just of like, hey, he's a bad guy. No, he has a different point of view. It may not be the right point of view, but it could be swayed in different ways of whether or not that's good or bad. They start blurring some of the lines here, and not saying all of them are that way, but I just think it's interesting that they are making things more complex instead of just the generic formula.
Yeah. And I think that goes with like the amount of films that they've already made, films and TV shows, right? So like in the beginning, you can like just put out Iron Man, like let's put out something that's gonna be a blockbuster, that's gonna catch people's attention and get them to want to watch the next one, and build and build and build and build. And then after you've had, I don't know, well, I mean, geez, how many movies have there been? Like 15?
23?
What?
22, 23, something like that. Yeah.
You can start to lean on your credibility of like, oh, this was like really like, this is a good movie, this is a good brand, like build your brand. And then you can start to do those more experimental and less, if you didn't know the characters or the brand, like maybe I wouldn't go see that, or maybe like that's a weird motivation or something. You know, you can start to diversify.
Yeah. Cause like, would WandaVision, if that was the first one out the door, would that have floated? You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
I don't think so. Yeah. People would be like, what the heck is this? I mean, critically, some of it may have been appreciated. Like, I mean, like how I appreciated that every episode up to, you know, actually the whole thing, every episode was a caricature of the sitcom style, or from a decade.
But I can say
maybe from that angle, but
for me, like I didn't really care for a lot about sitcoms like that growing up. So whenever I watched those first two episodes, I was like, I don't know if I'm feeling this, but I was like, okay, I know these characters, I know this universe, and I really want to see where they're going. So I stayed invested and ended up really liking it. But I would have been one of those people that you'd have lost me. I'd have been like, all right, I'm not getting this. It's not me.
Right. Whew. Well, we said a lot about episode 3, and I didn't really think we were going to have a ton to say about episode 3. I only took like, so I took 5 notes. Cap, no knock, Wart, great, Zemo. Was that her mom? Madripoor. Sharon Carter is a bad A. So those were my notes, and I was like, well, I figure we'll get into some kind of conversation about this, but I'm going to rewatch episode 4. Oh my god, it's so good.
Don't amp it too much, man, because
I'll be watching like, it right, dude, after what happened, Ryan.
You have no idea, it is fucking amazing.
Well,
I'm going to leave that in and put a bleep right there just to emphasize how excited I am about episode 4.
Well then folks, you'll have to join us next week as we talk about apparently the best episode of any show ever in existence. So
yeah, no, it's not the best episode of any show in existence, but it's getting good. It's getting good.
I knew it.
So we're recording this a day late because vaccination schedules. So yeah, that's why I've already watched episode 4, but we're going to talk about it next week.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited because it's only supposed to be like 6 episodes and this is 4. So yeah, we're getting to the,
this is the crest.
Yeah, it's kind of,
this is the crest, man. Yeah. But anyways, I'm going to leave you on the edge of your seat. Well, if you're already listening to this, you can probably go ahead and watch episode 4. Go watch episode 4. It's amazing. And I think that wraps us up for this week. We're, like I said earlier, we are going to talk about the Eternals next week. So If you haven't grabbed it, go ahead and check it out via the link that we've got in the show notes. Other than that, say goodbye, everybody.
See you all next week.
Later.
Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.